Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Oh, this is awesome. With the fourth overall selection in the 2026 NFL Draft. NHL Draft, my bad. Sorry about that. The Buffalo Sabres are proud to select from the Prince Albert Raiders, Daxon Rudolph.
Daxon Rudolph.
Yes.
Has launched up the draft board, Megan. Number four overall, a defenseman to Buffalo.
Quite a start from a Sabre standpoint on Friday night at the draft. A friend of the show, great friend of the community, and Hall of Famer Thurman Thomas announcing Daxon Rudolph as the first Sabre pick. And there were more in round number one and beyond, and we'll dive into all of those with Marty and Brian. There was news from the Sabres main page this morning, though, and that is Beck Malenstein getting his deal. It's a six-year contract that has an interesting total dollar figure, and it comes in at a pretty good cap hit for the Sabres for the next half dozen years.
Make sure you get those $2 that are at the very end.
$17,500,002.
That's what it is. That's how you multiply by six, people. So here's the thing with Beck Malenstein. We all wanted him to state he was going to be a UFA on Wednesday, July 1. The Sabres needed to get through, you know, a few deals. You know, obviously, you make the Zach Benson's contract. You acquire Owen Zellweger in the draft, as a trade with your second round pick. He's an RFA. You're going to have to figure that out. They're still paying Krebs, but I felt like the priority was Benson for me and Malenstein, because both of them, you want to get them done before July 1. Benson was going to be open for an offer sheet, and Beck Malenstein, well, he was going to walk. So to get that done is excellent. And I get, like, six-year deal, you may say, that's a long time. We're seeing that a lot more now with Fortliner, bottom six forwards, is you try to keep the AAV as low as possible. Maybe Malenstein could have gotten $3.5 million, maybe a little
easily.
Bit more.
Look at all the teams that are still way. He easily could have gotten more. Obviously.
$3.5 to $4 million.
That's exactly why.
You give him.
You're going to make
years.
Me talk about Michael McCarron today,
yes,
aren't
Michael
you?
Yes, Michael McCarron. Please,
it's completely different, but also very similar. In the sense that you're looking at a player that you know what to expect.
Yes.
And you're not anticipating him going off for 50 points, nor are you expecting him to drop off physically and defensively and every situation that you've entrusted him in already. You expect that you can do that more moving forward. It's a much harder gamble. This is strange to say, because obviously we fixate on high-end talent, but it's harder to project productivity among higher end players as they age. How are they going to age? You don't say that as often. Well, you know, with players like Beck.
Availability is a value, and Beck Malenstein playing 81 of 82 games last year and available in all the playoff games. Yeah. That's one thing. The year before, 76 of 82. The year before with Washington, 81 of 82. Like, availability.
Durability,
that's an asset, knowing that you have a Beck Malenstein penalty killer. The way that he lays down block shots, will take it in the back. Like, he'll, like, get himself in any which way. I think that's huge. And again, that is continuing to build now your group. I think that the top nine, when you look at the forwards right now with the Buffalo Sabres, are pretty set. I mean, could there be additions on Wednesday when it comes to free agent? Absolutely. But you're pretty much set. You always look to add. But now you've added a piece or kept a piece that is huge for your locker room, for your fan base, for the work ethic, for the leadership. I thought that was a fantastic contract that Yarmo gave out to Beck Malenstein.
Well, as you mentioned, though, $11 million just about in cap space that remains, and still players to sign, including the newest in Olin Zellweger, who we'll touch on coming up, obviously Peyton Krebs, and then what else do they do beyond that? The Sabres were in a lot of rumors and undoubtedly will continue to be in those situations. And again, I don't know what you're going to do on Wednesday in your role in free agent coverage. Like,
wow.
Have you been a part of a talent show at any point in your life?
I mean, I did shoot Jen Edger with the T-shirt cannon.
That was not talent. That was merely a spontaneous reaction.
That was lack of talent.
But holy cow.
I'll say this. The big focus will be, and we won't know if anything will happen between now and then, but Connor Hellebuck in the conversation,
right.
And apparently, according to multiple sources that are saying, hey, you know, the Winnipeg Jets and the Buffalo Sabres may circle back.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't happen over the weekend at the draft, but that doesn't mean it doesn't happen between now and Monday. Or Sergei Bobrovsky, what does he do? There's other goalie storylines that will unfold on Wednesday, but that's my main focus for the TSN panel.
We'll continue the draft story on this show, and we'll do so after we quickly talk about Dax Rudolph, who was the Sabres, surprising to some, fourth overall pick. It was loaded from a defense corps first round, especially
yes.
in the top 12, and that was the expectation. Many people's orders were different. What did you make of Rudolph, who, and by the way, all five of the Sabres draft pick selections over the weekend are here at development camp, which is starting at 2 p.m. today over at Harbor Center.
Yeah, so for Dax and Rudolph, when we showed the clip of, you know, the ESPN broadcast that they all jumped like, whoa, the Sabres go, you know, jump the board, and Dax and Rudolph jumps way up on the board. Calm down. Like, Craig Button had him seventh overall. It's not like he was ranked to be 22nd, and he jumped to, you know, fourth.
Mm-hmm.
This was the first defenseman taken, and probably because the Sabres felt that was the better defenseman taken. And that was an opportunity at number four to say, once Vancouver went with Caleb Malhotra, which we didn't know if they were going to go with Malhotra or not at number three, now you have your pick of your defenseman. And Chase Reed was there, and obviously Dax and Rudolph, others. The two biggest thing that I look out of Dax and Rudolph, high-end shooter and playmaker. He had 78 points in 68 games in Prince Albert, and he's going to the University of Denver. So he's going to continue his development through the college ranks, which Denver just won national championship.
Again,
great coaching staff, great organization,
and
great school.
They're loaded with NHL picks in their incoming class. Yeah, but it's getting more and more pronounced, just the way the shift has happened from junior to college to incoming, you know, recruits who are already top of mind for NHL teams.
And
right?
he was already committed to go this year to
Correct.
Denver. Not like, oh, I'm going to play one more year of juniors and
right.
then I'll go. So that's great because his development continues, and I think he'll have a major impact at Denver.
Ilya Morozov was also taken in round number one. We'll hear from his coach, Anthony Nerin, from Miami University a little bit later on in the show. A really well-rounded young kid. His story is super impressive. He's just incredibly mature, both physically and, you know, scholastically. This is a kid who, on his own, pushed and pushed and pushed, and again we'll dive into it more with his coach and hear it through, you know, his experiences with Ilya. But this is more of a pick that seems like a steady projection is expected here, and not necessarily the highest end. It's two-way already when you're describing this player.
Yeah, so, I mean, watching the clips of Ilya Morozov, you know, we talked to the experts, the draft experts, before the draft the last 2 weeks.
His name came up a lot, didn't it?
His name came up a lot, but it was, you know, the first the Sabres were going to draft 27th, and then his name came up around there, but then 20th, his name still came out around there. So I had a feeling, look, that the big, tall, lengthy centerman that's playing college hockey already. He's still 17 years old. He doesn't turn 18 until August. And so when he moved to Miami, Ohio last year in August, he had just turned 17.
Mm-hmm.
How many just turning 17-year-olds do you know can adjust to playing college hockey, going to school, new environment? Like, that's the maturity that we're talking about. So that's pretty impressive. But he makes me think of Jordan Staal. That's what I think of when that, and I know, like, Jordan Staal just won the Conn Smythe and has had a fantastic career. He's got two Stanley Cups and captain of the Carolina Hurricanes. But I look at Morozov and I'm like, that's a lengthy center that's got great defensive instincts, that has great maturity to his game, That's who I think of when I think of Morozov is Jordan Staal.
Sabres did not draft any goaltenders during this year's class. They did grab a couple last year, and those two will be here at development camp in Samuel Milosh and Evgeny Prokhorov.
Yep.
Do you sense that there's another goaltender who's likely to make a bigger splash at dev camp this
week? I don't know that we're looking at making a big splash at dev camp, but yes, my son Jacob, who plays at West Point College Hockey, he was invited to the development camp. So funny enough, why I missed the show last Thursday is because I wasn't here. Remember
Friday?
Well, I missed the Friday night show, but Thursday during the day Thurman Thomas was here,
right?
And Darren Dreger, I had to go get him at school. He finished his cadet field training a day early so he could come back in town to get ready for dev camp.
That was his sophomore year, right?
That was his sophomore year, going into his junior year. Funny, I just looked at the roster that was announced, and they did their vitals, like their height and weight and whatever, and it says 6'4", 190 pounds. Yeah, he lost about 10 pounds in a month in the field, right? Wow. They're in the woods and all of that, so usually he's about 200, but now got on the scale at 190, which he'll be happy to. He says he needed to lose a few pounds anyway. But it's going to be fun. Like, that's a fun thing for a family to have Jacob take part of the development camp. It's a very small group this year. You're looking at, you know, there's not three or four teams. It's like one ice practice, everybody on, a lot of talent, a lot of local flavor.
You've got 28 here. It's not that small. I mean, they've got 14 forwards, 11 D, and three goalies. It's actually a little bigger than what I was thinking it was going to be.
That's bigger than I thought it was going to be.
Bigger than last year's, if memory is serving correct. Anyway.
But they're going to practice this afternoon, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Friday morning, 9:30 until
Thursday
noon.
Morning.
Thursday morning, sorry. 9:30 until noon is a 3-on-3 little tournament that they've got going on at Lecom Harbor Center.
One of the key elements that few people talk about in advance of Dev Camp, and especially the 3-on-3.
Yeah.
Free air conditioning.
Yes.
At Lecom Harbor Center on Thursday morning. This is shaping up to be a little bit of a hot stretch. So keep that in mind
warm.
If you're wanting to prioritize where you want to be on Canada Day morning at 9:30.
No, that's Thursday morning, not Canada Day, July 2nd.
Oh, yes. I've gotten so caught up in the excitement of the actual Canada Day.
In between Canada Day and 4th of July, like where you want
to
cool off.
It's good.
It's going to be a fun time at development camp. So, and you want to see the five that just got drafted? Good. You want to see last year's picks, but Radim Mertko is going to be there.
Yep.
There's going to be some local flares with Gavin McCarthy, Patrick Geary, others. So there's definitely some local junior Sabres alum in the ranks.
But it was Gavin McKenna that led off the draft, selected by the Leafs and Justin Bieber.
That's what it was.
Right here on Friday night. And that leads us into the early Calder Trophy odds.
No way. Yes. That's out already?
Well, why wouldn't they be? Porter Martone, of course, made a huge splash with the Flyers coming out of college at the end of last year. He is a slight favorite right now ahead of Gavin McKenna in Toronto. And, of course, how much more will all of these teams be tweaking and retooling and setting themselves up for even bigger hopes this coming season? Obviously, a lot of the Flyers' hopes already focus on Porter and Gavin McKenna and Frundell with the Hawks. And what about the next Hudson with the Washington Capitals? And, of course, Stenberg, who went number two as expected as what was widely viewed as a terrific draft for the San Jose Sharks.
I put my hand in the air. I want to say, anybody wants to take a little Consta Helenius at plus 3,300? Duffer, I think that Consta Helenius is going to be one of those rookies that, you know, people around the league may not look at and say, oh, this guy is going to be in the talk for Rookie of the Year. I think he could be. Now, my money would be on Gavin McKenna. I think that, you know, the fit in Toronto, he with Austin Matthews, the power play fit, everything. I think there is going to be a lot of points, a lot of assists for Gavin McKenna. I would say Gavin McKenna in my book would be ahead of Porter Martone, but Consta Helenius would be right there as a, you know, third wheel, fourth wheel for me. And I think that the odds are really, really, like, in a, heavy against him, but I would put a lot more stock in it.
Amherst head coach Michael Leone, a big part of development camp this week for the players, and he'll be on the show tomorrow here on Sabres Live. He won't be coaching Anton Wahlberg next season. Wahlberg was dealt on Friday to Anaheim with a second rounder that allowed the Sabres to bring in another defenseman. This on the heels of the Byram trade to Chicago, and Olin Zellweger is now another young member of Buffalo's defense.
I absolutely love that trade. Absolutely love that trade. I was always a big fan of Olin Zellweger. And last year, took a little step back with the Anaheim Ducks in the sense that, well, they added, you know, a John Carlson later. They had Trouba. So all of a sudden, Zellweger doesn't find himself on the power play anymore. He had played like a lot of power play 2 years ago, no power play last year, played a little bit more penalty kill. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, well, what do the Sabres need? They don't need a power play guy. They got Rasmus Dahlin. They have Owen Power. They need a guy lower in the lineup. But his skating ability, his skill set, his playmaking, I love it. I think this is going to be a fantastic addition. So all of a sudden, my defense core right now looks like Dahlin and Samuelson together.
Hang on. Oh, don't skew it for the audience just yet, because you have the Sabres Live poll question here.
Oh, okay. Well, what do you want to say?
Well, the question is going to be...
I didn't see the poll yet. I was
know
busy
you didn't.
Beforehand.
I sensed you had not seen the poll question.
Okay.
If Dahlin and Samuelson... Producer Sam, this is why he needs to attend the pre-show meetings.
I was here. I was just doing homework.
Just in another room. If Dahlin and Samuelson stay together, who would you pair with Owen Power?
Okay.
Connor Timmins, Louis Crevier, Zellweger or Metsä? Free agent acquisition. And the early returns on this poll, and partially perhaps influenced by the general manager's comments on this matter.
Yes.
Zellweger or Metsä that's leading the charge here. Now, I think it's heavy emphasis on Zellweger.
It just moved up again.
But what we heard Jarmo Kekäläinen say the other night was, you know, like he and Crevier might be battling for a spot here with Power. So that in itself, Jarmo's hilarious. He's always like, I leave that up to the coaches, but he must have said that about four times, it felt like, on Friday night. But it's fun to think of again. And you mentioned where things got slotted with Anaheim. Like, you have to remember, from the moment Zellweger was drafted, what changed for the Ducks organizationally, and that was the meteoric rise of Jackson Lacombe, right? And then all the veterans that came in, and then the coaching change, and then everything changed because they weren't down here. They went like this, and you have to ride, you know, some of the horses that were pushing you there. But it doesn't change what Zellweger is as a skater, first and foremost, and what we've already seen Buffalo be able to do with young defensemen and putting them together and finding these pairings, obviously last year being the highlight.
Well, technically, his 5-on-5 production went up because he didn't play on the power play, didn't produce on the power play, so 5-on-5 production went up. He went from playing 5 total minutes of penalty kill 2 years ago to almost 70 minutes of penalty kill last year. It was still number 4 on the defense with and you look at, you know, the Sabres defense, Connor Timmins is going to play penalty kill, Samuelson, Dahlin, they're going to play penalty kill maybe. So, but you can put him in there to take some minutes away from others, right? Maybe Samuelson. So for me, strictly because I am looking at left shot, right
again?
Shot, again.
We didn't learn?
Well, we did learn a little bit in the playoffs that they didn't like having 2 right shot on the third pair. When they tried with...
Was that really the reason, or was it just because they leaned on the other 4 all year?
They leaned on the other 4 a lot, but they tried Kesselring and Timmins one time, and it didn't really look good, the 2 righty. So, and last year, I mean, at this time of year last year, or maybe whenever they made the Peterka trade last year, I thought, well, Kesselring's a righty, and Power's a lefty, second pair, they'll be together. Mm-hmm. It didn't work. It didn't happen. So, but because I'm still focusing on the lefty-righty, the way that I have them written down right now is Dahlin and Samuelson together. They're both lefty, but they did awesome together. There's no reason or need to change that.
Well,
I've got Power on the left and Crevier on the right, and I got Zellweger on the left and Timmins on the right. Now, does that mean that at any moment you could change Crevier and Zellweger and have your top 4 be all lefties again? Because they did it last year. Your top 4 was all lefty with Bo Byram. So, but right now, June the 29th, I have Crevier with Power and Zellweger with Timmins.
Well, the response to the Sabres Live poll, Ryan said he voted Crevier, but Jason said, I think you have to break up Dahlin and Samuelson to have 3 legit defense pairs. So that was obviously a talking point going into last season. But then seeing what we saw, and you just mentioning what you thought maybe of the third pair and the usage during the playoffs, like, would you ever consider breaking up 23 and 26 now?
I would not.
Right.
But it is an 84-game season next year. And I think that what we saw Lindyrov do a few times this year is try different combination, even with the forwards or the defense, to see, hey, if we have to deal with injury or, you know, poor performances, we're there. And maybe he didn't do it enough when it comes to the forwards, because then you got to the playoffs and you're trying to still make Thompson and Tuck, you know, work. And then game six of the Montreal series, you're like, I'm going to put Benson and Norris and move Thompson to the wing. Mm-hmm. And Zucker and Quinn were together with McLeod pretty much the whole season. I think we may see over the 84 games next year more player movement, which may mean, hey, let's give Dahlin a partner to just kind of get familiar with if we have that opportunity. But I wouldn't do that yet.
Again, still to come here on Sabres Live, Anthony Nerin, he's the head coach at Miami University in Ohio. That means he is the head coach of Ilya Morozov, a Sabres first-round pick. We'll get his thoughts. He was here for draft weekend and get some insight into Ilya coming up.
I don't know how he recruited him.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
He's so young.
Well, and there were so many big stories that came to fruition and others that didn't around the NHL, so let's rapid-fire this.
Oh, boy.
What do you make of the latest Vegas move featuring Dorofeev to the Rangers, who immediately signed him to a 7x11 deal?
Yeah, and obviously the Vegas Golden Knights didn't have the space, in my opinion, for Pavel Dorofeev as an RFA. So you look for a trade partner. That was the but you know what?
But why not make room for your leading goal scorer? Like, you can always make room. Like, what is it that they didn't like about a young player and one of only two homegrown guys they had on their roster?
I think it was easier for them to get the best return.
But what did they get? And now what do they have?
Well,
I mean, I get it.
They got two first round.
They could also get Werenski and Larkin and all the rest and somehow make it work, right?
So I feel like it's easier maybe to get a return that way as opposed to say, I got to shed all the salary to make space. Teams see you coming, right? You're walking in with a sign like, I'm selling my players, right? And that, but, Dorofeev last year, he was dropped in the playoffs. He moved from the Eichel line to drop a little lower. And so I had actually mentioned that the Rangers could be a team that will acquire like a top end forward, like when you look at some of the big forwards that may have been on the market or whatnot. So they did with Dorofeev, and then they gave him the deal. I think that is a perfect move for the New York Rangers, having lost Panarin last year and the Trocheck situation, like you're adding right now.
Despite what I just said about the Vegas loss of this player, I believe the Rangers overpaid. Not in the trade, the actual dollar figure. I don't think he's an $11 million guy, which is crazy for me to say based on how much I love other guys. Anyway, J.J. Paterka's a Bruin. What do you make?
I think that, again, the Bruins giving up two first-rounder for J.J. Paterka. That's a pretty good return for Utah to be able to get that in a player that didn't fit. Like, we've talked about it, like, since the trade deadline, like, J.J. Paterka is not going to be in Utah long. Like, it didn't seem like it fit. Pretty good fit in Boston, but I'll tell you this. I think this may be like the wake-up call that a player like J.J. Paterka should be getting now. Traded twice in a calendar year from a team that made the playoffs now because of the acquisition they got from Utah. You got into the playoffs, but you were not a factor at all for them in Utah. So you go to Boston, maybe that's the wake-up call that he gets reunited with Kevin Adams, who now has a spot in Boston.
Well, but more importantly, he has a countryman in Sturm as his head coach, and the recent acquisition of McIlvain, the assistant coach who had been in the Anaheim system, was actually his coach over in Germany, so he's really close with him too. It looks like a really good situation for J.J. Paterka.
Yes.
Mason McTavish, as expected, on the move, he goes to the Blues.
So the Blues were going to make some moves. You know, obviously they traded Kyrou. They've made some additions, and now they were sitting with four first-round picks on Friday night. You knew they were going to move some of that. So they ended up trading two first-rounder to get Mason McTavish. I'm really high on Mason McTavish. I get it. It hasn't seemed to have worked well in Anaheim, but just like Owen Zellweger, there's other situations, circumstances for that. You have players like Leo Carlson, and they added a Kreider, and they added, you know, that you're like, okay, maybe they took a spot ahead of McTavish. Mm-hmm. Didn't seem to have worked with Joel Quenneville. So he goes to St. Louis. Like, St. Louis is trying to retool on the fly here, and I don't think they're done. I think there's still moves that St. Louis will make.
Kosa goes
to Utah.
Still netted a first rounder, which is interesting because he himself, of course, was a first rounder. But his AHL numbers have been very consistent, and he has a great opportunity ahead of him now with the Mammoth.
But most people here in Buffalo are going to look at the Sebastian Kosa trade from Detroit to Utah and say, well, wouldn't the Sabres be able to get the same thing out of Devon Levi, right? Like, in a first-round pick,
I think... he wasn't a first-rounder, right?
I mean, Levi was not a first-rounder, but I think that the projection and everything that he's done from the draft day on has matched Sebastian Kosa to a certain extent.
Right.
So, but I think
your pedigree is your pedigree as a pick, right? And that always follows you?
I mean, I was a first-rounder. Thank you very much. I still get traded for first-round picks if I was in the market. Which, by the way,
when I
hosted that breakfast Friday morning, Terry Pegula says I was on the trade block. So I don't know if that's going to continue.
How about the deals?
Listen, I like this for Utah. But for Detroit to be able to get a first-round pick to a player that was going to have to be put on waivers, I think that is a big return for Detroit.
How close do you believe the Sabres were with the Jets on a Hellebuyck deal?
I think they were pretty close. And I don't think they're far now. I mean, the rumor mill is a rumor mill that there was...
Dave Pagnotta from fourth period said, you know, the number four, Lukanen. Quinn and something else. And then the reports on draft night from Friedman and others was that the Sabres thought it was a little too much.
Well, the Sabres also wanted to potentially swap the four for the eight. Mm-hmm. So moving from four to eight, and Winnipeg wasn't willing to do that for what was the price that the Sabres were willing to put out there. So, I mean, obviously, if you can swap from four to eight, it's going to cost you more.
The Sabres still would have been able to get one of the defensemen, obviously, that they coveted.
Exactly.
But Winnipeg ended up with Bjork, who we were starting to get really interested in, too, right?
Yes, yes. And they ended up picking him. But so there was two sides to this, right? With the Sabres weren't willing maybe to put in the trade to sweeten it up, or if, you know, Winnipeg was willing to do a swap at four and eight, or they wanted to pick four and eight and be like able to retool as with getting a bunch. But so the interesting thing with this is that I think that Connor Hellebuyck drives a big bus in Winnipeg, that he was asked about his no movement clause and said, yes, I would go to Buffalo, that if now he turns around and says, I want to go there, then Winnipeg may not have as much leverage as they had last week. So I'm still not closing the door on it, but I think it got really close, so much that the discussion went to the agent and Connor Hellebuyck about a potential move to Buffalo.
We have less than a minute on this. Werenski, Marchenko, let's just stop there. What do you think happens with the two of them?
I think they move Marchenko. I think they keep Werenski, or at least try to make it work for now until the trade deadline. And then maybe he's on the way out, you know, later this year. Do I think that he stays past next year if Columbus doesn't make the playoffs this year? No, I think that that would be the, like, I'm your captain, I'm going to stick around, but if that doesn't work, I'm out.
So many big names still in play, presumably, as we hit free agency on Wednesday, and obviously a ton of activity so far. And can't wait to see how it all unfolds. There have been deals today as well. Brendan Gallagher, as expected, has gone from Montreal to Vancouver. Nils Höglander has gone from Vancouver to Nashville. And we will try to keep tabs on that moving forward here on the show. Special guest coming up. And we want you, Sabre fans, to lock in for this upcoming 26-27 season. With a Sabres 10-game plan, you can enjoy per-game savings, playoff ticket priority, guaranteed seat location, and choose from two plans, each featuring one matchup against either Tampa or Montreal, plus nine more games. Learn more and secure your plan today at sabres.com/10. Anthony Nerin, coach at Miami University, coming up.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Can't wait to see you and your group at Sabres games this year. You can create unforgettable game nights for 10 or more through our group ticketing experiences. Save on box office pricing, plus get access to exclusive experiences like photos on center ice, post-game slap shots, Sabres access, and more. Visit sabres.com/groups for more info.
All right, here we go, baby. With the 20th overall selection in the 2026 NHL draft, the Buffalo Sabres are proud to select from Miami University, Ilya Morozov.
That's right. It's not Miami of Ohio. It's Miami University. He was the youngest player in college hockey last year. He surprised a lot of people. Big player, good speed, and so the Buffalo Sabres stocking up their system with another young forward who really surprised a lot of people last year.
Ilya Morozov is at development camp of the Sabres this week, which begins at 2 p.m. Ilya's head coach this year at Miami University, Anthony Noreen, who joins us now. Anthony, welcome to Sabres Live. It's a pleasure to have you on the show. Start us with one word to describe Ilya Morozov.
Special. You, when you do this, as long as I have and as long as you know, many of us in the coaching profession have, there's certain guys you get a chance to coach and you're like, this guy is the reason why we do this. Why you put in the hours, why you're away from family, why all the things you do. And this is a kid that makes you absolutely just love to do what you do every day. And you feel lucky to be around and obviously to experience that with him and his family and see the joy and the smiles and the hugs. I mean, it makes everything you do worthwhile.
So, obviously, the youngest player in college hockey last year. He's not even 18 yet until August. What was the recruiting process for you, and when was the first time you saw him play? Because he was 16 in August last year before turning 17 when he probably went over to you guys to the dorms and all of that. So, you're looking at a very young player when you recruited him.
Yeah, and he came to campus. You're absolutely right. He came to campus as a 16-year-old last year. And moved in and started classes. So probably the only player in college that was doing that, or athlete in college that was doing that in any sport. So I actually got to know Ilya as a 14-year-old. I was coaching, this was my second year at Miami. I was coaching Tri-City Storm in the USHL for 7 years before that. So Ilya actually came over to the U.S. to one of our futures camps in Chicago. And we started building a relationship there. He was unbelievably impressive at the time. He didn't really speak much English, but just watching his game and the way he played and how mature he was. And, you know, I think we had an all-star game at the Futures Camp. His team won 6-0. He had 5 of the goals. And the most excited he was for the guy who scored the other goal, the 6th one. And you just started seeing what this kid was. And then he stayed in Chicago that year and he played for Sam Povorozniak. And Sam was part of our staff in Tri-City. He was coaching the Windy City Storm. You know, this might be a little confusing, but we were the Tri-City Storm in Kearney, Nebraska. Our ownership group had a AAA team called the Windy City Storm in Chicago, which still plays out of there. And Sam coached that team. So Sam coached Ilya at U15. When I was in the Tri-City that year, we then began recruiting him, and we tendered him. So in the USHL, you could sign a 16-year-old to play for you the following year. You just have to sacrifice your first-round pick. So as soon as we were able to tender him, which was early in the season, we tendered Ilya. He would come and spend as much time as he could with us in Kearney and skate with us at Tri-City. He would come for the week, skate with us. We'd send him back to Chicago. Once his season ended, he would come up and skate with us a bunch. So he was a guy that I and we got to know a ton through that process. Now, I took the job at Miami in April. I had to call all those players and let them know I was leaving. Now, it was tough. I just recruited Ilya the whole year to come and play for us. Now it was, hey, listen, I'm not going to be your coach in Tri-City next year, but I would love to talk to you about Miami University and what we're about to build there. And, you know, began that recruiting process. He visited us. We were able to offer him on August 1st, and he committed to us on August 1st. And obviously played in Tri-City that following year. And then it was a little bit of, okay, is this the right thing? Because from the beginning, he said, hey, if I finish my schooling, because he had to accelerate, he had to finish junior and senior year. If I finish my schooling, can I come in next year? And our answer was yes, if we feel like you are physically, mentally, emotionally ready to do this. It's a massive step to be playing college, not just be playing college hockey, but be on a college campus as a 17-year-old in a locker room with 24, 25-year-olds. So, you know, throughout the year, we evaluated that. Myself, David Nyes, our GM, and Troy Thibodeau, who coached our forwards, watched him, talked to him, saw him, visited him, and at the end of the day, we felt like it was the right thing for all parties to go out and bring him in as an accelerated freshman.
Pretty easy to see why you use the word special to start,
yeah,
because that's an awful lot. And we were talking a little bit earlier about the scholastic side of it. So he seemingly just embraces all of this, but like how is he able to accomplish all of this and still continue growing as the player that you see in him and that you want him to be? And how would you describe the relationship for you with his group, family, et cetera, to be able to be a part of this draft weekend here in Buffalo?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when you recruit a kid as a 15-year-old, you tender him in the USHL, there's a recruiting process, and there's obviously a massive amount of trust between a family and a coaching staff and an organization, and same thing with a university. So we've been building that trust with him and his family and his parents and now his agency group. And so that part is kind of been the easy part because we've gotten to know them so much over the last couple of years here, especially when he's this far away from home and his parents hadn't been able to visit. This is the first time they came to the U.S. the entire year. We were able to see them. They came to Belfast when we played over in Northern Ireland, but this was the first time they came to the U.S. all year. So obviously there's got to be a lot of trust in myself and our staff and our university that we're going to take care of them. Then the next part is like again, going back to the word special, there's probably 30 stories my staff and I can tell about things that make this kid special. But the academic side, like Miami University it's not a cakewalk for these guys academically. It is a very trying academic university, especially our business program, especially our finance program, which is the hardest major we have to get into at our university. And Ilya's in finance. Not only is he in finance, he's excelling in finance. And it's same thing in just the way he trains and everything he does. I mean, last time we had a recruit on campus a couple of weeks ago that was French speaking, and he was talking to Ilya because Ilya was in the gym working out, and he said, "Oh, I'm on lesson 35 of Duolingo. I'm learning French outside of getting ready for the NHL Combine and being in finance and everything else that goes along with that. He's also learning French just on the side. So he's almost like a Renaissance man. And you know what? Troy Thibodeau, who works with our forward, says that all the time. He's like, he kind of has that Kobe Bryant Mamba mentality where he is just going to stack up little wins and put in more work than anybody else and continue to do that over time. And we feel like that's why he's taken such a big jump. You know, from the first summer we saw him to the next year, a huge jump. From last summer to this year, a huge jump. And we expect him to just continue to do that because there's just not many people on earth that work as intentional as Ilya does day in and day out.
So earlier in the show, I said, obviously, it's easy to look at a Jordan Staal and what he accomplished, winning the Conn Smythe, but the career and, the consistency of his play, especially on the defensive side of things, the body size. So I'm like, okay, well, maybe Morozov is a Jordan Staal type player. But is there another gear that you are working on with him when it comes to the offensive side of the game? Because he was so young, but knowing that maybe there's more skills that can be shown next year.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, Ilya, when he was in youth hockey, he was a prolific scorer. He was the youngest player in the USHL, and yeah, he had his struggles maybe offensively, but his game was great. And this year, 20 points in college hockey, is not easy to do for a freshman, especially the youngest freshman in college hockey. So there, I think there's a lot more offense there than maybe we all give him credit for at times. And again, I just wouldn't put it past this kid for that side of his game to continue to grow. I know he's going to continue to work at it and learn how to use his physical tools. Obviously, what you love about him is whether he's scoring or not, you want him on the ice, and you certainly want him within your organization because of the type of person and leader and character that he is. But like we all believe, and I know that he's going to keep working to add to the offensive side. We would expect those numbers to take a jump this year and hopefully to continue to take a jump. And he proves that he has that next level of offense.
Miami University head coach Anthony Noreen is with us. Anthony, how would you describe the whole draft weekend here in Buffalo, highlighted by you and the Morozov family on Friday night?
Yeah, I mean, just I would say first off, it was absolutely first class. I mean, just from everything to the red carpet arrival, and there you see the picture right there, and just seeing the way the fans, you know, especially the little kids calling and getting autographs from someone like Ilya, and you know, that was really cool. And then obviously just everything on the floor, being there firsthand and watching it unfold. I mean, the hearing the fan base, and then it's pretty special to be sitting with the kid, to be taken by the hometown team and see him be embraced and see how many autographs in the media and everything. And we all know, as a staff and in our university knows, like, Ilya is going to represent us unbelievably. We thought he did. We couldn't have been any more proud of just the way he handled the interviews and all of the I guess pressure that comes along with a draft day. And then again, just to see him there with his sister and mom and dad and girlfriend and all the people that support him and people that have known him for a long time, like, again, so mature, handled it in such a, he's just such a kind, appreciative kid. Like, not like he's wide-eyed to everything. He doesn't expect, there's absolutely no, you know, expectations from him or how he should be treated or what should go on or where he should be picked. Everything is exciting to him. And again, it's why he's just such an easy kid to root for. And you see a smile right there. That's like, that's what it's all about. That's, you know, it makes you so happy and proud and know that this kid is deserving of everything he's gotten, but you know that he's going to continue to work to get even more.
Now that you experienced the city of Buffalo, will that make it easier for you to come recruit some of our local kids here with the Junior Sabres and Nichols and everything? Because and now that he is representing Miami, I mean, there's going to be kids that are going to say, I want to play where Morozov played when he played college. So how often are you going to come back to Buffalo and see some of our youngsters?
Yeah, we absolutely consider Buffalo part of our recruiting backyard. Like, that's an area. And over the years, I've had a ton of players from Buffalo and had a lot of success with them as players, but maybe even more so just the stock they come from and the type of guys we've gotten from that area. We have Ryan Smith on our team right now, who grew up playing for the Buffalo Junior Sabres. I coached him in Tri-City. He's working with us or playing for us right now in Miami, and can't speak any higher to him and the type of person. So we're going to continue to recruit from that area. We're going to continue to get into that area. Obviously, two of my assistants are there right now for the U.S. National Camps. That are going on, the festival's going on. So it's an area that absolutely we would love to continue to recruit from.
Anthony, thank you for the insight today. Hard not to be excited from a Sabre fan standpoint for the person that Ilya Morozov is.
No doubt. No doubt. You guys are going to love him, and we're excited to see what he could continue to do here. And, you know, obviously an unbelievable day for our university and in our hockey program, and we're excited for him.
Great stuff. There he is, Anthony Nerin. He's the head coach at Miami University. We'll continue Sabres Live right after this. Stay with us.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sabres Live poll today. We were asking, if Dahlin and Samuelsson stay together, who would you pair with Owen Power? Right now, it's the duo answer of Zellweger or Metsä that's leading the projections at 68%.
Well, I think that if you wanted to put a big umbrella over Crevier, Zellweger or Metsä, you'd probably get to about 95%, 92% right now. And that's probably what's going to happen. Look, they're probably going to try Zellweger or Crevier, vice versa. Maybe Metsä gets in. That's what is going to make training camp fun, because of the competition to see who's in that second pair, who's on the third pair, who's the seventh defenseman. There's going to be, and there could be players added here on July 1.
Well, prior to the Canes winning the Cup, I was talking to you on the show about the fact that Eric Tulsky deserved an awful lot more love. He did not win General Manager of the Year award that was announced here in Buffalo over draft night. Bill Guerin, in fact, got it. Bill is, of course, still trying to add potentially Dylan Larkin or more to the Wild moving forward. A thought on him winning this?
Well, I felt like Bill Guerin and the Minnesota Wild did a lot of aggressive moves this year. Obviously, Quinn Hughes. Billy Guerin was the GM of Team USA at the Olympics. They won gold. That doesn't count. But funny enough, Chris McFarland, now the GM of Nashville, but then Colorado, had more first place votes than Billy Guerin.
Time for D&D and pronunciations.
Dazzled and
disturbed.
So when your name is Gleb Pugachev, one would assume that, you know, if someone asks how to pronounce your name, you're going to focus on your
last name.
Let's check this.
Hi, just quickly, Gleb, could you pronounce your name just so that we're not mispronouncing it?
Поскажемо твоє ім'я. Скажи ім'я. Це повне, ну просто Глеб, да. Глеб.
Well, maybe it's the translator that missed this one.
Thank goodness said, we got that.
Full name? No, just first. Gleb Pugachev. Oh, but anyway, goodness. It's C-H-Y-O-V. So I don't know if Pugachev, like it could change, right? But he says Gleb, and that's the way.
Yeah, they tend to change over the course of time.
Yeah.
We were concerned about...
We're not all Smiths.
Ilya Morozov. Well, Smiths, as it pertained to the draft, because he's Latvian. But happy birthday, legend of Joe Finley. He is 39 today.
Oh, absolutely. And happy birthday to all who are going. Now I'm going to development camp and checking it out.
Watch your baby.
That's right.
Enjoy.